This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
At 4:25, I jotted down some reasons for you guys to feel pretty good about the Caps tonight. I'm going to give those to you. I'm going to get your level of confidence on the game as you get ready to head over to the arena. 5 o'clock hour. I'm bullish on the Commanders based on how easy their schedule is. Am I too bullish? We will discuss on Grant and Danny. No, Danny, today you are locked into the Fan. Beltway Blitz, the Nats are on deck with Britt Ciroli, the Commanders with Julie Donaldson. Haven't had her on the show in a long time. We will discuss their schedule release from last night with JD coming up on G&D. But right now, let's get things started on the Blitz inside the Beltway at Capital One Arena with the Caps, who play an elimination game tonight. Andrew Gillis, NBC Sports Washington. Andrew, let's just start with the fact that Carter Verhaeghe was not on the ice for Florida in their skate around this morning. I don't think Mason Marchman is supposed to play. Is there a chance both of those guys miss this game? That would be a big deal, I would think.
Yeah, it absolutely would be. Last I checked and last I heard, Marchman isn't even with the team, so I think you can go ahead and count him out tonight. Verhaeghe, I mean, it's the playoffs. Teams are very, very careful. Teams are very, very specific about, you know, what they say and how they say it. So, you know, maybe we'll see him tonight. Verhaeghe's going to play. But like you said, if Verhaeghe's not in the lineup, you're talking about a guy who has just absolutely tormented the Caps so far this series. I mean, he obviously had the five-point game in Game 5. But even if you take that out, he had 5 points in the previous four games. So, you know, he's been excellent this series. So losing him, I think that's a pretty big blow to the Panthers and kind of their scoring depth.
Yeah, I'd love to never hear his name again the rest of this series. That would be great. Who's been the best Capital for you so far through five games?
It's got to be TJ Oshie. You know, TJ, he's had such an up and down year. You know, he was hurt. All the absences kind of run together. So forgive me if maybe there's a COVID absence in there. He could never stay on the ice consistently. And now when he is, I mean, you see the results. He's been excellent on the power play. He's really kind of helped drive that team's power, the special teams for the Capitals. I mean, that is one of the reasons why we're staring at a game six right now, because the Capitals' power play and their penalty kill has been excellent, and TJ Oshie has been a large part of that. So I really just can't say enough good things about what Oshie's done this series. I think a close second would be Ilya Samsonov. I mean, he's come in game three. I mean, he's been excellent. You can kind of go back through the games and point to different positions and say different things about the way the game could have gone if they didn't get a save there and they didn't get a save there. So it's Oshie one, but I think Samsonov's pulling up the rear right behind him.
Yeah, Sammy, .923 save percentage. Oshie's 5 goals lead the way. Kuznetsov's the only other guy with multiple goals, and he's only got 2, just to give you an idea of, you know, how much of the firepower Oshie's been providing for the Capitals. Andrew Gillis of NBCSW is with us. What went wrong after they took the 3-0 lead in Game 5? Because the answer to that could unlock what they've got to avoid tonight to try to get a win in Game 6.
Yeah, you know, I've been watching it just over and over and over again, just the goals and the way that they happen. And I think the biggest thing for them is structure, because, you know, the Panthers are an exhausting team to play. And when I say that, I mean, it's not just that you have to play nearly a full 60-minute game or as close to one as you can get because of how good they are. You know, it's not the basic things like that. It's that they can erase a 3-goal lead in 11 minutes. And really, they can do it without breaking a sweat. So I think you've got to say in your defensive structure, I mean, you look at some of the goals that happen, you know, defensive breakdowns, you get a whiff on offensive zone turnover, which leads to a breakaway and a two-on-one, and then you get all these odd man rushes, and that is just not something that you're afforded the ability to allow against a team like the Panthers. So you've got to stay within your structure, and as we saw the other night, that includes when the game is 3-0. I mean, I remember in the middle of the second period, it's easy to start to think, okay, game six, Caps are going to come home with a chance to win the series. You start to kind of look ahead, and the Panthers do what they do. So you've got to stay in that structure pretty much no matter the score the entire time. It's really, that's going to be the most important thing. If they can keep what they've been doing against the Panthers, keep them to the outside, keep those high danger chances to a minimum, you know, I think they've got a shot tonight.
There is a Caps fan that just got in their car that's listening to the radio, that's headed down to D.C. to get something to eat before the game. Tell that Caps fan why the team is in good shape tonight to push this series to a game seven.
Yeah, I think it's because whoever this Caps fan is has seen it. You know, I think that the frustration with this entire series for the Capitals and for fans and for everybody has been, it's not like, oh, you know, I wish we could play with the Panthers, or if we just had Tom Wilson, we could play with the Panthers or whatever. You've seen them play with Tom Wilson or without Tom Wilson against the Panthers. You've seen them play when they can hang with the President's Trophy winners. So you know that they can do it. You know, you've seen them take a 3-0 lead. They were 2 minutes away from stealing game four in a game where the Panthers were really, really good. So the issue has just been consistency. And I think that if the Capitals can kind of put together a more consistent effort, a more consistent performance, you're going to be sitting pretty because you've watched them do it. You've watched them play well. So you know that it's possible. And I think that facing elimination with a lot of veterans on their team, they kind of know the stakes. I mean, it's kind of been beaten over the head that this is a veteran team. They are getting older. And I don't think that's lost on some of these guys. So they know the stakes. They know what it's going to take. And you've seen them play well against this team before.
Andrew Gillis, NBCSW.com is where you can find his work on the Capitals. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Grant. Appreciate it.
Enjoy the game tonight. You got it. Let's talk baseball. Britt Ciroli covers the Nats in Major League Baseball for The Athletic. Britt, I'll extrapolate things out abroad here nationally in a moment, but let's start with the Nats. They've lost 2/3 of the games they've played. Sometimes they can't hit. You know, yesterday they had 4 hits. Sometimes their starting pitching gives them no chance. I guess the bottom line right now is it's just not a very good team, huh?
They're really not. And what's really unfortunate, Grant, is that they've actually been okay on the road, but they're like one of the worst teams in baseball at home when you look at, you know, all the major statistics. And that's not typical for a team at all. What bothers me, I think, and what is going to keep Davey Martinez up at night is the errors, the defensive miscues and the errors and the base running blunders like we saw in the game against the Mets the other night where two guys were thrown out at third base on the same play. These are things that can't happen to any team, but particularly a team that's not very good. They just don't have the depth in the roster to cover for poor play.
Yeah, and Britt's referring to kind of a blooper reel moment. You cue that music, and it was your two best players. It was Soto, bad base running, ball in front of him, tried to advance, and then Bell getting up and trying to go, and they're basically standing on top of each other with the ball there and both out at third. That was cringe. I don't know how else to describe it.
It was the national season in a nutshell so far, I think, that play. If you had to give me one play to describe the national season, that would probably be it. It has been underwhelming at best.
Yeah, it's a shame. But I've been watching, I've been going, and like so many fans kind of suffering through it because it's baseball and there's some good. Josiah Gray, the 24-year-old right-hander they got in the Scherzer-Turner deal, has actually been very solid. He's got a 3.4 ERA, 34 strikeouts in 31 innings. What have you seen from him, and what do you think's next in the development as he tries to further incorporate his changeup and really become a frontline starter?
Yeah, I'm glad. It's been a little bit of a pleasure.
I'm going to throw Britt on hold. We'll see if we can work out her phone. We had good momentum there. We were working. We had a good back and forth going. We were talking baseball, breaking down the Nats. By the way, as I said, she writes for The Athletic. She wrote a great story about a player who had been in the Cleveland Guardians system who overcame some adversity and just trying to get healthy. But here's Britt with us again. So let's try again on Gray. What do you think so far?
Yes. before you guys rudely hung up on me, saying, no, I think with young pitchers, you're always kind of wondering, all right, are they going to kind of get their teeth kicked in for a few starts? Are they going to take their lumps? Gray's been fairly consistent. I think the one thing that he needs to get better is to limit the walks. Command has been a little bit of an issue. That's not atypical for a young guy. You know, they'd rather nibble around the corners than get beat, giving up a home run, giving up that hard contact. But he has shown why the Nationals were so high on him, why they wanted to trade for him last July. He is a future frontline starter. And I think if he can figure out the command piece and continue to gain confidence, he's only going to continue to get better.
All right, speaking of starters in the front of their rotation, the guy that began the season on the hill for them on opening day, Patrick Corbin, believe it or not, Britt, three straight pretty good starts for him. In fact, it's his best three-start sample in terms of ERA since 2019. Look that up. I mean, he has not done this in two-plus years. And on top of that, his ERA is over six, but if you look at his fielding independent pitching, it's in the threes right now, which means he's dealt with some bad luck, some bad defense behind him. Are you ready to say Patrick Corbin is back?
I'm not, but I also was one of those people who I think when I spoke to you, Grant, on opening day, said I don't think we're ever going to get 2019 Patrick Corbin again. So clearly I did not see this coming. But I think for him it's very simple, right? It all lives on the slider. And whether he's able, you know, to command that in the zone, it just sets up everything else. You know, when he's getting this really good swings and misses, the really nasty movement on that pitch, he's vintage Patrick Corbin. So I like what I've seen the last couple starts. As you said, a lot of it has to do with the guys behind him, the Nationals just not being a very good team right now, or we'd have probably even better numbers over that stretch. I think for me, I'd like to see a solid month. I'd like to see what he does the next one or two times out before I've really said he's turned a corner. But I have seen and heard a lot of pitchers lately kind of give credence to Jim Hickey and some of the conversations that they've had there. And I wonder what they did, what kind of adjustment, because this guy, I mean, the night he got booed off the mound, this guy just looked totally lost. And I was not expecting this kind of a turnaround.
Britt's written some really good stories recently. You should go check out, including a take on the Twins rotation and a great piece that is available now on a Cleveland Guardians prospect who's trying to beat the odds after a really freak injury. Can you just real quick tell people about that story and how they can find it?
Yeah, sure. As you mentioned, it's on the Athletics MLB page. And what was crazy to me was somebody told this kid, this 18-year-old kid, he was going to die in that hospital in the Dominican Republic. And credit the Guardians for getting him out of there, finding a way for him to safely fly to the Cleveland Clinic of all places. Talk about a big jump up from a hospital in the Dominican. He underwent two neck surgeries, lost 50 pounds, and is now throwing bullpens and trying to make it back for his pro debut. This kid still has not made any starts, any career appearances in any game because of COVID and this neck injury. His name is Frank Lopez. And whether he makes it or not, guys, I think he's just shown that he is winning at life, just a tremendous spirit and work ethic to even survive and to be throwing again.
Yeah, fingers crossed for him, and the story's great, and I'm glad you brought it to people's attention. Britt, thank you. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks so much, guys. Take care.
Check her out in The Athletic. All right, let's move along and talk about the Commanders. And to talk about the Commanders, we've got Julie Donaldson. JD, great to have you on the show. How you been?
Great. It was absolutely a fantastic night knowing our schedule for the upcoming season, and we can lock it in and hopefully everybody's buying their tickets.
Yeah, so what were your thoughts when you saw the schedule for the first time? What were some of your big takeaways and how do you feel it came out?
Well, for the first thing, I'm like, okay, I'm from Jacksonville, so the Jaguars are coming up and playing us at home at FedEx Field. I called Mom and said, this is no excuse for you to get up here. But hopefully through those first two games between Jacksonville and the Lions on paper, of course, we know it's not played there, it gets Washington off to a good start. We know how important those starts are. You don't have to wait too long to get to the Cowboys in week four. I think the big thing that's really important, too, is when Carson Wentz plays the Eagles for the first time, it's going to be at FedEx Field. Get those nerves out there first before he has to go and face, you know, those oh-so-welcoming City of Brotherly Love fans in Philadelphia for Monday Night Football. But I think that's one definitely to circle. But the big thing, you know, Grant, is we don't have a bye week until week 14. that is huge. This team trying to stay healthy to get to that stretch, I think, is going to be something that's really to keep your eye on.
Yeah, it's a great point. I also noticed, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. You'll be at all the games, obviously, on the call in the booth. But for fans, this will be the first time ever that every single home game is at 1 o'clock on Sunday. Now, I guess that's scheduled to change maybe at the end of the season. But 9 home games for the first time ever. None are on Thursday, Sunday, or Monday night. You get all 1 o'clock kicks. I actually think for people in town that don't have to uproot their work schedule or anything, that's a pretty cool quirk.
Yeah, you know, those late games are pretty rough, that's for sure. They're exciting to be in prime time by all means, but of course it does make getting to work the next day difficult. So, and then obviously, look, we're closing out the season with the Cowboys, and I did a show with London Fletcher that's going to be in the booth with me on game days this year. Very excited to have him, and he's like, that game he believes is going to be the one that determines the NFC East. He's anticipating this going all the way down to the wire, and wouldn't that just be nothing but drama, which of course is what we love in the NFC East, as long as Washington gets the better end of that, because there's going to be some bad Cowboys this upcoming year.
Yeah, London knows a thing or two about that. He played in that 2012 division title game at FedEx Field that still goes down as one of the great moments of a lot of young Commanders fans' lives because they weren't around for the Super Bowls or the playoff runs. So that 2012 game against Dallas to keep them out of the playoffs to win the division was special. Maybe we can replicate that here 10 years later. Julie Donaldson, Senior VP, Media and Content, is with me. I wanted to ask you about a couple of things you have going on, actually, Julie. But real quick before I do that, you had some interviews that caught my attention after the draft. Ron Rivera, Jack Del Rio, both of them said some pretty telling things. Specifically, Rivera kind of detailing that he thinks Percy Butler is going to play a lot. He suggested to you maybe 30-plus snaps as part of that Buffalo nickel package, and you know maybe he's on the field as a fourth-round pick right away. I thought that was super candid. I was surprised he was that welcoming with information, but what do you make of that? He's going to have a huge role, it sounds like.
Well, here's the thing. Percy Butler was all excited to come in and be the gunner on special teams. The coach is like, no. Like, we got other plans for you. And that's great that there's a lot of faith already. And that was part of the plan going into this draft, too, Grant, is they wanted players to play. They understand the urgency of this being year three under head coach Ron Rivera and his staff. They understand the urgency of having Carson Wentz coming in at this point of his career, basically be that guy. But this is the year that they believe they need to really take that next step. So they needed guys that could come in and play right away. And even when I asked Jack Del Rio that, he's like, I said, do you want guys that you can maybe groom into great talent later? Or do you want them where they can, like this year? The approach was specifically for that, such as the Percy Butler. And the way that they play their defense, they need three safeties on the field at one time, the majority of the time. He says, I want guys that have talent. And that's what they believe they got and what they targeted. So, yeah, there's a lot of pressure on this team this year, especially because last year, as even, you know, defensive coordinator Del Rio did tell me that, you know, they didn't have it all figured out. And we saw those pains along the way.
Yeah, and he said a big reason why was not getting 100% participation in the offseason, which he said was damaging. And the participation is higher this year, and he's happy about that. So that's a really good thing. Julie, you've got a fundraiser going on right now. Julie's Man and Woman of the Year fundraiser, supporting the Leukemia Lymphoma Society, LLS, making donations right now. People can help with this fundraising campaign for your Man and Woman of the Year. Tell me about it. What's going on exactly? I've heard a lot about it from afar, but let me get the information from you.
Well, I'll tell you this. My days are not busy enough. I say that in jest, that I decided I needed to go out there, join this campaign, and try and raise $100,000. Whoever raises the most money wins, but of course we all win because 90 cents on the dollar does go to the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. I see the direct impact it is having with children that are fighting this disease, with the research to try to end it. I myself lost 2 childhood friends. It was my first experience with loss to leukemia, one with a 2-year battle and one by the time he was diagnosed to his passing, it was a month. So this is something that rocks lives. Everybody probably knows somebody that has dealt with some sort of blood cancer. That is what this addresses as well. So I said, let me see what I can do. I'm well on my way, but we're making it fun. We have Saturday night against the Astros. It is Superhero Thought Giveaway. There is a link where if you buy tickets, proceeds will go to my campaign. So hopefully everybody comes, joins me, sits in the section, and let's talk some baseball as well. Catch that. And then also I have a great online auction. I don't know if you got to check some of this stuff out, Grant, but there's some really cool stuff. Like, you can do dinner with Doug Williams. You can, you know, do the weather with Doug Kammerer. And then afterwards, they have a dinner at medium rare. I mean, there are so many great things that are on this auction. You have to go check it out. Just and that's one way to contribute as well. But I'll take cash. I'm being shameless with that. All money helps.
Hey, it's all for a good cause, so you should be. How can people help, real quick?
Yeah, I'll give you the link. Maybe you can tweet it out. You can tweet it out from my Twitter. It's out there as well. I'm posting on Instagram again. I'm going all in. So let's make sure that we do this, do our good, and everybody hopefully has some fun along the way with some great auction items and joining me at the Nats game Saturday night.
All right, great. Julie, thank you so much. Thanks for talking, Commanders. Schedule is out. People are excited. We will see you out at the park soon.
Yep. Hail to the Commanders.
That's Julie Donaldson, and that is your Beltway Blitz. Grant and Danny without Danny today on The Fan. Next, hey, Caps fans, let's do this thing together. Going to the game, I want to hear from you. If you have a ticket, 800-636-1067. If you don't, you're going out and watching at a bar somewhere on a Friday night with some buddies. Would love to hear your plans. If you're going to be at the house, what's the spread looking like? I've got some reasons why I feel okay about tonight. I'm going to give those to you next. And then we're going to take your temperature on the MGM National Harbor listener lines on your level of confidence that the Capitals can force a Game 6 back in Florida come Sunday. Got to win tonight or their season is over. Next on The Fan.
Here's Nemtsov, will play with it on the dasher board. Back up to Carlson, they score! The puck looked to change direction on the shot from Carlson. 12:51 to go in the first. It's 1-0, Washington!
John Walton on the call, as heard here on 106.7 The Fan. Caps have done a pretty good job in this series, starting fast, getting the first goal. And I believe Walton's going to be on the call tonight on TV on NBC Sports Washington with Joe B unavailable because he's losing his voice, which is a dagger because Joe B's my guy and everyone wants to hear Joe B call Caps hockey on television. It's the way it should be for a big Capitals game. But obviously Walton has settled in very well over the years in this market and called the Stanley Cup and is our radio voice and he'll do a bang-up job as well, but I want to tell Joe B. that I'm thinking about him. He's a longtime mentor of mine in this business, one of the really good human beings in this business. He's sat in my kitchen and gone over audio of calls I've had and helped critique me, and he's just as good a dude as there is. So I hope he gets his voice back quickly and he can call a bunch of goals next round. But it's up to the Caps to make sure that Joe Beninati gets to keep calling games this year, because if he's not on the call tonight, you got to win to give him a chance in Game 7 or perhaps early next round. But that was Walton, as heard here on The Fan, and we got the game live tonight coming up about 3 hours from right now. 7:30 puck drop, a little later than has been the case at home with a Friday night tilt. So I wanted to give you some reasons why I feel pretty good about the Capitals tonight. Some of this is a bit of a reach, okay? I understand. We're all nervous. They're facing elimination. But these are real reasons why they could possibly handle their business early, dominate the game. I don't really care what the score is as long as they come out on top. And ideally, you don't have to go to overtime. There is nothing worse than playoff hockey in an elimination game when you're watching a team you care about. Like last night, I was watching Tampa Bay and Toronto, and they were playing in overtime. And if the Leafs scored, the Lightning season was over. And it's not like I would have felt bad for them because they've won the last two Stanley Cups. But man, oh man, is that the worst thing. I've been sitting at Capital One Arena, playoff game, overtime, against the Canes. You lose and you're done. It's just terrible. Excruciating, anxiety-inducing. So I want this thing to end in regulation, and I want the good guys to have more goals when it does. But I'm going to give you some reasons for hope tonight, and then I want to get your thoughts on the phones. I want to open up the MGM National Harbor listener lines at 800-636-1067, and I want to know how you guys feel, and what kind of chance you're giving the Capitals tonight. So the first thing I'll say is, last night, there were two teams in the same boat the Caps are in tonight. Both of them went home to their home arenas to try to stave off elimination. Both of them got huge energy from their crowds in Boston and in aforementioned Tampa, the Bruins and the Lightning. Both of them won Game 6 at home. Both of them forced Game 7. And you've already kind of seen the narrative completely shift now in those series where the team that could have ended it didn't, now hosts, And now all of a sudden, the pressure's on them. And it shifts like this. It goes from, I could be eliminated, I've got to win two in a row, to you win that first game, and now everyone looks at the other team and goes, oh, you better not blow this. It's a big deal. So I'll start with that. You go back a day before that, the Rangers were fending off elimination. They were down 3-1. They were at home. This has been a theme in the East. They won that game, and they did what they had to do. Out West, the Oilers did the same thing last night. Three of the four teams that had a chance to extend their season did, down 3-2 last night, forcing a Game 7. So with that in mind, I would tell you this has kind of been the trend. It's not to say the league necessarily wants it or officiates it that way, but Game 7s are good for the NHL. And you're going to get an opportunity, I would say, if you play a pretty clean game for the most part. I think they're not going to call things that they don't have to call for either team, the deeper you get in these series. So you got to really commit a penalty, and I think that becomes helpful as a general rule. I think that the idea that they're going to call a high stick when you just kind of get loosey-goosey with your stick in a game one or a game two, that might go away a little bit as you go on here. So I like that. So these are all things that I think help out some. So you say, okay, well, that has nothing to do with the Capitals series necessarily. Give me something specific to the Capitals series. Well, how about this? Carter Verhaeghe was not on the ice today for the Florida Panthers. He had 5 points in Game 5. He has 10 points in this series. If he doesn't play, that's a game-changing loss for Florida. Doesn't mean they can't win. They still got more firepower than military artilleries. I mean, they still have more guys that can score goals on any of their lines than the Capitals do. You go through all four lines. They've got offense. They were able to put the puck in the back of the net. But he has been massive. He has been a significant piece to the puzzle. If he can't go with 10 points so far through the five games in this series, that is the first huge blow they've dealt with, a la Tom Wilson for the Capitals. And I wouldn't put him on the same level as Willie in terms of importance to them, but it's the first time they've really missed someone who's critical. Next thing I would say is, look at how the home games went at Capital One Arena. Game 3 for the Capitals, they dominated. They blew Florida's doors off for the last 15 or so minutes of the second period, certainly the third period of that game. It wasn't the greatest start. They definitely were on the wrong end of the play early, but they ended up just waxing them, winning 6-1, 5-goal output. They carried play. They manipulated terms. They found the back of the net. They beat Bobrovsky to the point where it wouldn't have been odd if he got yanked in that game. That was the first game they played at home after coming back home when the fans had been waiting to get out to the arena and cheer a la tonight. Then in Game 4, I know that they weren't great and they got outplayed and they got outshot 2-1. But with 2:30 to play, they had a lead. So you can't tell me at home that they haven't done a pretty good job protecting home ice here. That the fan base hasn't helped the cause. A fan base that, because of the pandemic in 20 and all the strict rules in D.C. the year after that, hasn't had a chance in 3 years until now to actually get to the arena and celebrate these games and to be loud and to be 20,000 deep wearing their red. And you can tell that there is a palpable buzz. There's an electricity. Having been at both home games in this series and a ton of regular season games, the elevation in support, in noise, in just overall atmosphere has been stark, obvious, awesome. And I think it will be a factor tonight. It should help. Last thing I'll say is this. Tom Wilson was on the ice in Arlington. Now, he's not going to play tonight. He's been ruled out, and he's not going to play, in my opinion, in Game 7. Hasn't been ruled out, but I would be shocked. I just think there could be, and I'm going to ask Al Koken about this when he joins me at 6 this evening. I think there could be a benefit to the team. I think there could be like a morale-boosting, feel-good element of Willie being back on the practice ice, where he's doing everything he can to get back. We got to make sure we hold up our end of the bargain so that all this rehab is, not for nothing. And I just think this idea that he's not shutting it down, thinking, well, I can't come back because we're almost done anyway. You got to feel good about seeing your boy put his body through whatever he is to try to get back. And don't tell me the Panthers have handled Prosperity well in this series, by the way. They haven't. Game 2, they win, right? They come back to D.C. in Game 3 and get annihilated. Game four, they win. They had to come back late. They had to get the goal off the nice bounce after we miss an empty net with Garnet Hathaway, right? A lot of things go their way. They win in overtime. Everyone says this is over again. They're going back home. They found their game, and they fell behind 3-0. Now, they came back, and the Caps collapsed, and I would say it was as much or more bad Caps as it was good Panthers for the, you know, five unanswered going back a couple nights ago. But my point is, when they win in game two, game three, they didn't play well. When they win in game four, they got off to a terrible start in game five. So the series kind of says that Florida, with Prosperity, hasn't done what you're supposed to do. They haven't added. They haven't accumulated on top of the good. They've kind of done something productive, taking a step forward, and then taking one or so back. And you're more desperate, and you need the game, and they don't. And for all those reasons, I think you can feel good tonight. Let's go to TJ and Percival on Grant and Danny. TJ, I love all five of your goals in this series so far. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How do you feel about tonight?
I actually feel pretty good. I'm feeling a little bit nervous. But first and foremost, man, everyone that's listening right now and you're going to the game tonight, you got to be as loud as you can. I want you to wake up tomorrow with no voice, getting ready for game seven. I was watching the games down in Florida, man. That crowd is so baby. That fan base is nothing. We need to show them what a real hometown crowd is and be loud tonight. Second, we got to shoot the puck. I know we've had leads in this series and we've given them up, but we're not going to win any kind of game if we don't shoot the puck, man. Game five? We had 16 shots on net. That's not going to win you a hockey game. I think Florida had 30 that game. I think we definitely got to play a physical game as well. I know not having Tom Wilson this series hasn't been the best, but we got to play physical, come out guns blazing, man. And our stars have got to show up. Oshie's been scoring a lot of goals for us, but we need all of our star power tonight. We need to be loud and force that game seven, man.
Be amazing, and I'm with you. You need to get something out of the crowd, and I never doubt Caps fans. I mean, they know what they're doing. They've been doing this for years. This is almost like a spring rite of passage around here. You know, it becomes early May, you put your sweater on, and you go down to Capital One Arena, and you watch playoff hockey. To your point, though, as far as the physicality goes, hits as a stat don't tell the story to me, because oftentimes if you have more hits or if you have a lot of hits, you don't have the puck. And it just means you're chasing play, and Florida is dominating Corsi with shots and percentage of time with the puck on their stick. Having said that, there is a physicality that I care about, which is when you get a chance to knock them off the puck, if you're in the neutral zone and you're able to blow someone up because they don't have their head up, if they're chasing pucks down for board battles, or they're in the corner trying to dig a puck out, and you can, you know, get your forecheck working and get a puck in deep and hit someone behind your own net, you know, behind their own net deep against the boards, that kind of stuff in the flow of the game is huge. You start to have them look over their shoulder. A lot of these guys want to get up and down the ice and score goals. It's where not having Willie has been big. But, you know, Oshie's going to bring that. Ovechkin always flies around and is very, very physical. In this series, Anthony Mantha had a 10-hit game. You want him get back to laying the lumber a little bit. And then on the defensive end of the ice, you know, Dmitry Orlov, Martin Ferravari, those guys have been, I think, really good in that regard. But Garnet Hathaway, Nick Dowd, that fourth line, which for much of this series just has not had the scoring opportunities, the goal chances that you're looking for. That could be a way for them to really impact things, frankly. You can't score a goal by trying. You can hit people. You know, you can be really, really heavy. You can wear a team down by, you know, getting a little cycle going and setting up shop in the offensive end. I mean, those are things you control. Dowd has no goals in 1 point in the series. Obviously, Hathaway has one goal in 1 point in the series, but it could have been two, and if it was, it'd be a different story. All right, I'm going to open up the phones for you guys next. MGM National Harbor Listener Lines, 800-636-1067. If you're going to the game, want to hear from you. Watching at home, what are your plans? What is your level of confidence that the Caps force a game seven? We will hear from you next. Plus, an NFL transaction that just went down catches my attention here. Pretty good wide receiver just found a new home. This is Grant and Danny. No Danny on the Fan.
I've been in it for so long. It's just the swings of a series. And now we're down. We're down for the first time in the series 3-2, but know, the year we won, right. we were also down in every series, and we battled back. And sometimes it adds a little bit more urgency to your game, some more will, and you dig a little bit deeper, and you got to work for the luck. And maybe we're going to get a little bit more lucky tonight if we work a little bit harder, and some puck is going to go posting in instead of posting out. And, you know, that's the game. I have all the confidence in the world. Everybody in our room believes that we can win tonight, and that's really the only thing that matters today.
That's Lars Eller from the Junkies this morning. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Lars may have scored the biggest goal early in the Stanley Cup run. Game 3 winner against Columbus in overtime off his skate, or else the Caps would have been down 3-0. They might have gotten swept in the first round in 18. Imagine that. Had they not have gotten out of round 1, they went on, obviously, to become a buzzsaw and win the Cup. I mean, it takes stuff like that. The Nats were going to lose that wild card game until Soto changed the world for the better and hit the ball in the right field that got misplayed by Grisham. If that doesn't happen, same old Nats couldn't come up with a big hit. You got to hear all that stupid stuff for another year. And they never won their World Series, and they've never gotten out of the division series. So it does take some bounces. It takes some luck. And Lars Eller and the boys are hoping for a little bit of that tonight at Capital One Arena. Paul is in Southern Maryland on Grant and Danny. No Danny today. What's up, Paul? How are you?
Hey, Grant. Thanks for taking my call, buddy.
You bet.
So, look, man, I'm watching the last game, Game 5, and Barkov clearly hit Sammy intentionally with his stick, okay?
I thought so, too, by the way. They kind of made that like it wasn't a big deal. He didn't look at him, but why would you be lifting your stick up like that at that angle? I thought he completely
right
did
as,
that
right
on
as you're passing by. He most certainly did it intentionally. Okay? So we've got to keep momentum. We don't have Wilson in the game, right? He's hurt, whatever. So somebody else has got to step up. I'm thinking Manta has to. I'm wondering why it took all the way to the end of the game for Manta to drop his gloves. If I'm Lavi, if I'm on the bench, if I'm the coach, I'm telling him, I'm telling whoever it is, one of my goons, go in there. The second Barkov comes out of the bench, you drop gloves and let him know you don't touch our goaltender. I mean, that's like standing by and letting somebody slap your mother in the face. You don't do it. This is playoff hockey, man. We got to set the momentum.
So a lot of what you're saying actually makes some sense to me. Look, Manta is so important to them right now, skating on the top six, that it doesn't help a whole lot to send him off the ice for 5 minutes, especially, you know, his role. He helps in the penalty kill. He's big on even strength. They don't necessarily have a whole lot of guys that are going to fight. I guess it depends on who he'd be throwing fists with, who he'd be taking off the ice. Like, I'll take the trade of him and Barkov every single time, but he's not fighting you. Now, if you both get sent off for rough stuff, okay, fine, I'll take that trade. Absolutely, engage him if you can. What I was discouraged by after that is it reminded me a little bit of a quarterback taking a huge shot from a defensive player after the play. Or like someone hitting the quarterback and like taking a long time to get off him, or slowly like dragging their body across the quarterback as they get up. And no one really doing anything about it from the offensive line. Because to your point, he did get hit pretty clearly. He was down and it looked like he was hurt, and he helped draw the penalty, obviously, and they made the call. But no, you skate near the goalie in the playoffs and it's a huge skirmish in front of the cage. You spray snow on the goalie, hitting your brakes in the crease, and you're getting cross-checked and punched in the face. Like, maybe they didn't see it, frankly. I don't know. We had the benefit of high definition and an instant replay. But he comes through with a stick and whacks him in the head, and it was almost as if, like, you're wondering, this guy is armed and dangerous. Why are we calmly arresting him and putting him in the back of a car? Slam this guy on his face on the ground, jump on him. Like, this is the bad guy. This is the guy that you should be doing the angry, throw him in the car after you've beaten him up thing. That's how I felt when I was watching. Just a casual, like, everyone's fine. Let's just not hit each other here. And I'm like, you just hit my goalie in the face with a stick. Danny's in Rochester, New York on the Odyssey app. What's up, Danny?
Hey, Grant. How you doing, man?
Good. I didn't think you were joining the show today, but I'm glad you did.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, Danny Hoo-Hey here. So my really only question is, do you think it's all red meat? Like, he never even had spaghetti and meatballs before?
It's a great bit. It's really well played. How has the guy never eaten meatballs? How has he never even tried a cheeseburger? Sam Howe, how's it possible? Well played. I tip my cap to thee. 800-636-1067. You want to hop in on the Caps. By the way, I did post a poll, not only because I'm Grant H. Poulsen, but because we got to do a poll every day because we have a sponsorship from our friends at Epic Concepts to do so. Your IT solutions services provider serving the U.S. federal government enterprises, systems integrators since 2006. They sponsor our poll at Grant H. Poulsen today, which is, this is very simple. Will the Caps win tonight to force a game seven? Yes or no? Right now, 57% of you say yes, they win tonight. 43% of you say no. The audacity of hope, boys and girls. 57% of you are feeling it. All right, next, I want to get into an NFL wide receiver who just found a new home, plus some of the big NFL games from the schedule release that caught my eye. And Ryan hates a food that is delicious. Call him Sam Howe. On top of that, he said his mom made a bad version of it. And I want to get to the bottom of that because I feel bad for Mrs. Clary. So we're going to do that next on The Fan.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.